Falcons fans, it's been 2 weeks, but we are back for another edition of the FalconCast podcast here on AtlantaFalcons.com. We being Jay Adams, Daniel Cox. Yep. I don't know that I can hear you.
No?
You can't hear me? Now I can. Okay, you're
okay.
Good.
All right.
Yeah, let's make sure that microphone is pretty much
all right.
Lodged in your mouth.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and cram it down my throat.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we took the week off last week because Wednesday, when we normally record this podcast, there's
right.
a pretty big signing for the Falcons with linebacker Brian Banks announced as the most recent addition at the time. And things were just so busy that day that we just couldn't get away to do the podcast.
Right. I think we ended up eating about 2:30 in the afternoon. That was
I ate my lunch at 3 o'clock that day.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a lot of work that day, and I ate it on the fly, basically in my office. So, you know, it wasn't one of those.
I think I had a snack and then drove home and ate something there.
Wow.
I can't remember.
You drove under the influence of a snack?
Yeah.
Or I don't know. I don't know that I like
without
this.
The influence of food.
I don't know that I like
other.
This reckless behavior
yeah.
out of you. But anyways, in the past 2 weeks, there have been a couple of things going on.
A little bit.
You know?
A few things.
A few things. It's starting to get, I can feel it. It's starting to get to that point where things are going to pick up a little bit here. I mean, we're now just about a week away from the draft.
Less than 2 weeks.
2 weeks, sorry.
Yes. No, yeah.
I don't.
I know. That's what happens when you plan a week ahead.
Right? Yeah, I know. I don't have any concept of, like, you know, calendars. But, you know, you're closer to the draft. You've had these couple of signings. The schedule's released next week.
Mm-hmm.
All these different things coming together right now. Pretty soon after the draft, you'll have rookie minicamp and
yep.
then OTAs and then veteran minicamp, and then they'll disappear for 6 weeks before training camp, and then we're really rolling.
Yeah,
it's right around the corner.
Football
I mean,
season.
It's
yeah.
it's not yeah. that far away.
Yeah, it'll be here before you know it. I mean, you think back, what day is it? It's April 10th?
Yes.
What's that, 3 months, 4 months ago? We were ending the season. In
not
the
even.
Championship game.
It was
yeah,
like.
A little less than that. So,
yeah.
what, 4 months from now, it'll be training camp.
It's amazing.
Right?
It's amazing how fast it
yeah,
it really goes. And, you know, we sit here and we're like, oh, man, is it football season yet? And believe me, before you know it, it's going to be football season.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's kind of review some of the things that have happened over the last 2 weeks. Since the last time we were on here, the Falcons finally announced the signing of defensive end OC Umanyora.
Yeah.
We had heard all the rumors and the speculation and pretty much the virtual certainties out there leading up to it, and it seemed to be a process that just took a little while to get done.
Yeah.
But the words inevitable kept coming up, so we kind of knew that it was going to happen. But we got him under contract and introduced him a couple of weeks ago. Great guy. I loved his press conference, his introductory press conference. A guy that, you know, with a crowded defensive line in New York for a couple of years,
mm-hmm.
kind of ended up being that odd man out. But really, he's a talented guy who I think is going to do great things here in the couple of years that we'll have him.
Yeah, at least. You know, as I read a lot more about him and, you know, tried to really understand what why he was leaving New York and, you know, that whole thing, it really just seems like it boils down to the fact that the Giants – like we've always heard with the Falcons, you know, Coach Smith has that defensive line rotation philosophy. I think the rotation with the Falcons kind of occurs more in the middle than on the outside. And I think the Giants do a lot more rotating all their guys everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so his snaps were somewhat limited. And he still managed to produce, what, 6 sacks last season. But I think he's at a point where he feels like he's still got high-end talent, and he wants to be a guy that the team is really counting on. He wants to be one of those guys that's using everything he has to contribute to the team, and he felt like the Falcons were going to give him an opportunity to stay on the field a lot more than the Giants were.
Right, and that's a good point, because I think this is going to be a much different opportunity for him than what he's used to, and I'll be interested to see how he handles it. But he's coming here, you know, with New York, he didn't have to be the man. You know, he was a lot of the time,
mm-hmm.
But he didn't have to be. He had other guys around him who could make plays. Here, he's going to be the man. He's going to be the top guy that people are going to look to cause pressure, cause quarterback disruption.
Absolutely.
You know, get those sacks, open things up for the other players around him. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he deals with that, and probably, you know, more snaps than he's used to, and you know, just basically being in a position where he can be more of a leader. He struck me as that kind of guy, and I think that's a role that he really embraces.
Absolutely.
Just in talking to him. So I'm really excited to see how he comes in and handles that new role, being one of, you know, just what do we got now? Two guys with Super Bowl rings in the locker room?
Yeah.
Him and Asante?
Yeah, at least that.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of any other guys, but we had Chris Hope, but he's currently a free agent. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But you know, being one of only a couple of guys who have been to a Super Bowl, who have earned a Super Bowl ring, I think is a role that he embraces, and he wants to win here.
Yeah, you can't fault a guy for wanting to play more.
No.
Like, I just pulled up
I want to write more.
Yeah.
You want to write more.
Yeah,
I mean, we all, like, everything, if you love something.
Yeah.
Like, even if you're, and nobody's limiting us, we can write
true.
As much as we want.
I think we do about as much as we can.
Right. And, but we have a nice little rotation going on.
Yeah.
But we all, you know, if you love something, you want to do more of it. You know, this reminds me of that. We won't mention the brand, but the commercial with the girl, the little girl explaining why more is better than less.
Oh, yeah. There's
That's
commercials.
A great commercial. I love
it. I love those commercials.
I know. So do I.
And they were so great when they added the, like, Larry Bird and
yes.
Bill Russell and all those guys.
Yeah.
That
yes. But like, you know, OC's like that little girl saying, mm-hmm. We want more.
We want more. We want more.
And so that's... you know, we all want more.
Absolutely, we do. So speaking of, so I was just curious what more looks like to OTU Mayora. So I pulled up the box score and all the stats stuff from the Falcons-Giants game last season here in Atlanta. OTU Mayora played 50% of the defensive snaps.
Wow.
68 snaps, I believe it is, they had on defense. He played 34.
Interesting.
So that's a snapshot of his work, so to speak, with the Giants. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, they draft, and that's their philosophy. They draft, they draft a defensive end or a defensive tackle in the first round every year.
They load up on them.
Yeah. So it's only natural that that's going to happen. Justin Tuck got a handful more than he did. Chris Canty got more. That got young guy they like a lot. Linval Joseph from ECU, Jason Pierre-Paul, all those guys got more snaps than Umanyora. I don't think it's a knock against his ability. I think it's just their philosophy.
Not at all. Yeah, yeah, of course. And you know, a guy who wants to play more, sometimes it you know, that attitude doesn't get accepted well.
Yeah.
In when you've got exactly. So many guys to go around, but I think here, you know, he's going to have all the opportunity he can possibly dream of to succeed. So certainly
Absolutely.
Looking forward to his debut in a Falcons uniform. But another guy, Brian Banks, we mentioned him at the top of the show. Mm-hmm. Love this signing.
One of the most unique stories, I think.
I mean.
Going. I'm glad we got to be a part of it last Wednesday.
Yeah. That was really special. I was in the room when he signed the contract, and
yeah,
I'm
that's
like,
awesome.
Wow, this is really, really cool.
Yeah. And then he had his press conference or his phone conference with the national media.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these are the biggest of the big names as far as national media, sport or football guys go, writers. And they were all asking questions. And I will never forget, he had his phone pushed away to the side. And he didn't have it on vibrator. I think he did once, but
he did have it on vibrator.
Yeah, and it just kept like I was just watching the screen, and it was just like all these little pop-ups. Just his phone was just literally blowing up.
Twitter, text messages,
yeah.
All kind
yeah.
of stuff.
And that's fantastic.
Yep.
And this is a guy that you talk about people that deserve things, and you
yeah.
know that can you can discuss that in a number of ways. But a guy that has been through a lot and has handled it so admirably, and has
yeah.
handled it so. Just the way you'd want your kid to handle it, and he does deserve an opportunity, and I'm glad he's getting it.
Yeah, well, let's recap in case mm-hmm. somehow you've been living under a rock
yeah.
and
Welcome
you weren't.
Back.
Yeah, exactly. But Brian Banks was a high school phenom mm-hmm. back at Cal Poly. 16 years old and was expected to do great things.
Right.
As a junior, yep. And was accused of raping and kidnapping a girl, and went to trial. And well, it didn't go to trial. He pleaded no contest and was given 5 years in prison. Went to prison for 5 years. Got out of prison. Was on probation for 5 years. Had to wear an ankle bracelet, GPS. Had to register as a sex offender.
Yeah.
Couldn't leave the county. Finally got a friend request on Facebook, strangely enough, from the girl who accused him. And a message that followed that said, hey, I really want to meet up and blah, blah, blah. Well, Banks, being the incredibly bright kid that he is, I mean, because I was really struck by just how smart and well-spoken he is. Something he said he worked on a lot in prison. But he got with a California Innocence Project and said, hey, you know, I'm going to meet up with this girl. I don't know if she's going to, like, confess or whatever, because obviously Banks knew that the crimes that he went to prison for, he did not commit. And he's like, hey, you know, let's set up a microphone or something. And sure enough, you know, they wire him up, and she spills her guts and apologizes for taking away 10 years of this guy's life. And
you know, 10 years of his life, the opportunities
for
a career that he was working towards.
Yeah.
All these things.
And and that recording led to his exoneration, which meant that he could then pursue his football career. He got a tryout last year with the Seattle Seahawks. He worked out with us, he said, during his press conference. But we really liked him at the time, and I guess the timing wasn't right, just with Nolan coming in his new system.
It was just after the first round of cuts coming out of training camp.
Right. So it was the timing. He was going to be way behind. It was going to be tough, and I guess we kind of had an idea that he would still be available this offseason. So I guess we brought him back in for an interview or a workout, and they like what they see. And let's put this into perspective, okay? All right, we know that, you know, you get guys from college and you know what to expect with them.
Right.
They get their 3, their 4 years, whatever. These are guys who have been groomed to play professional football, okay? They come in for a workout and we don't always sign them. And it happens with every team.
Yeah.
Every team brings guys in. They'll try guys out. They make it. They don't make it. Whatever.
Absolutely.
I'm getting phone calls. This guy comes in, hasn't played a snap of college football, hasn't played any football since he was a junior in high school, and ends up signing with the team. We like him enough to sign him, and I think that speaks so much to the work that he's done since he got out of prison,
right?
And how determined he is to make his mark in the league. He's been working out with Jay Glazer, who's kind of mentored him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just an amazing, amazing story all around. But I love it.
I love it, too. You know, Thomas Dimitroff did a number of media interviews last week in the wake of that signing. And I think he said it, and if you don't think it just I'll put it this way for you. He said, you know, the signing of Brian Banks was not a charity case. It wasn't some feel-good story that we just wanted to create. We actually feel like he's a player. He's got an opportunity. And granted, the roster size in the offseason and moving into training camp is significantly larger than what they'll move. They'll go into, you know, the regular season with. But they don't waste roster spots on guys. You know, they want the best 90 guys they can find to compete against each other so they can get the best 53 guys. So they're not going to waste a spot. So I think the fact that they signed the kid, signed Brian to a contract to take him in through, you know, the off-season workouts and OTAs, mini camps, the whole nine, he's in early enough to do that. And he's a rookie, by the way. So he's kind of got a head start in that regard. I think the fact that they signed him says a lot about how they feel about him. And I was just, you know, there's two aspects to a guy that plays in the NFL. He's got to be physically capable, and he's got to be mentally capable to do it. I think the mental aspect of Brian's opportunity would be the most challenging thing, I think, for me personally, in my opinion. I think, you know, learning the playbook and all that stuff, because he hasn't had a huge opportunity to do that, will be his biggest challenge. But Thomas has said it a number of times. He feels like the adversity that Brian Banks went through to just get to this spot is something that most people have never even dealt with or never will have to. He's not that concerned about Brian Banks's, possible frustrations learning the playbook and everything. He knows the kid's going to dive in and really try to learn it. Brian Banks is 6'2", 250 pounds.
He is big.
For comparisons, because I know sometimes we hear those and we don't always think about what it means. Akeem Dent, 6'1", 239. Sean Weatherspoon is 6'1", 239. And Stephen Nicholas, for example, last year's three-star, 6'3", 230.
Right. So Banks fits right in with them. He's a little heavier, but he's not.
He didn't look
fat
by any means.
And actually, he said he had lost about like 30 pounds, you know, in his training to get ready to, you know, to try out for teams this year. And just amazing how much he's done. And the journey is to this point has been amazing. And I know I'm excited to see kind of where the next steps are.
And
what the next chapters are for him.
Yeah, I mean, I can't wait to talk to him at rookie mini camps and stuff like that. It's going to be fun.
It's really hard not to root for him. And if I know there's a lot of people who are.
So.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, so let's move on. We're going to go. Are we going to go on the clock right now? As you sip your coffee.
Sure, yeah. You caught me off guard there.
Sorry.
We can go on the clock.
Are we really going
to
go on the clock right now?
It's time.
We're going to give picks? We never give
picks. It's time. Yeah, no one ever asks our opinion.
No, I mean, they do. But I always say, no, I'm not going to give a pick.
Yeah.
But
we don't do this much.
I think we can, you know, for our loyal podcast listeners, we can give maybe our projections.
Okay, yeah.
You think?
Yeah, I want to, Jay.
Okay. Well, then go on the clock. The Falcons are on the clock. Who do they take at 30, Daniel? Who's your selection in this?
I'm gonna take Desmond Trufant, cornerback out of Washington.
Okay. My question is he gonna be there?
That's always the question, right? I think there's a decent shot that he'll be there. I'll probably say I'd be surprised if he is. Maybe, maybe that probably sounds strange, but I think I might be a little surprised if he's there. But I like him. I'd like him to be there. I think this draft is so strange in so many ways. I don't think anyone knows what's really going to happen after the first five picks.
And
go in so many different directions.
Exactly, and
that's why I feel like there's a shot.
Yep.
That he could be there. And I think some of the stuff with quarterbacks is going to come into play here too. Mm-hmm. In terms of what guys fall to the Falcons.
We see all the time where, you know, in the draft, you get these guys who fall inexplicably. And it's because you get some teams that take guys that a little earlier than they probably should have gone and whatnot. And it screws everything up. It's like you ever played blackjack? I don't want to sit here and condone gambling, but in blackjack, there's rules, and if not everybody at the table is abiding by those rules, it screws up the cards.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So I've been at blackjack tables, you know, just purely for research sake.
Yes.
Where somebody will get really upset at somebody else for hitting when they shouldn't have, you know, or holding when they shouldn't have. And because it screws up the cards for everybody else.
Yeah.
So I feel like the draft is kind of like a big game of blackjack in that way, because you'll have some teams who take guys that they probably shouldn't a little too early, and then, you know, these guys tumble. I think this year, like you said, to your point, has such a great potential for having that happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at last year, Peter Kahns. I mean, nobody thought that he would slide to the Falcons in the second round. He was a first rounder. So
yeah, I saw a lot of mock drafts that had him as the only center taken in the first round.
Yeah. So So you think you've got Trufant?
I'm going to take Trufant. I like his athletic ability. And we did him in the draft spotlight last week. And just reading about him, looking at some stuff. And then he was on Game Changers on NFL Network. It was cool to see him on there. I like his attitude. I like his personality. I like how he kind of thinks about the game, approaches the game. He looks super athletic, really smooth, backpedaling, like running with receivers and stuff. He just looks so fluid. I think his athleticism can help him make plays in the NFL. And as he grows in smartness, and, you know, learning the playbooks and, you know, learning coverages and all that stuff, I think he's just going to grow as a player. And I really like what I've seen of him and read about him. So that's my first pick.
All right, I like it. I think you know, I've done my research on him as well.
Yeah.
And I feel like you know, he would be a quality pick there. My question is he going to be there? I'm starting to think he's not. I'm starting to think he's going to go early. My thing is, and I keep track of the mock monitor, and we're 10 weeks in, and so many guys are saying Tyler Eifert, Zach Ertz, tight end, definitely going tight end.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's the case. I really don't. And I worry about what the fan reaction would be if the Falcons did take a tight end. I don't think that's the way. In the first round.
I think there's a shot there, to take
look,
somewhere.
I think at some point you're gonna snag a guy. But for me, there's a couple of things I'm keeping an eye on right now. I think it's interesting how much we're hearing about Jarvis Jones dropping. And he's tumbling his way down.
Yeah.
And I wonder, is that a guy that you take a shot at? But I think the fallout from that, if he does fall at all, is that there's going to be other guys who fall because of that. It's the domino effect.
Right.
And I like Alec Ogletree. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's my pick here.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
You're on the clock there.
So. I know I am on the clock, but I'm deliberating pretty much with myself right now. I don't like making picks here.
Okay. It's two interesting names that you mentioned, though. Ogletree and
Both Georgia guys.
Both some guys that I wouldn't even call them character concerns. They've just had some miss, you know.
Right.
They've been involved in stuff that got them into a little bit of trouble, as many kids that age have.
Right.
And you know whether or not they'll pass through the Falcons filter could. But at what point does the strength of the Falcons' existing locker room become strong enough to allow guys like that to come in that are talented? They just need some guidance and maybe some big brother type of guys around. What point does that happen?
Right.
If at all.
Right.
Because you've seen franchises like the Patriots do things like that.
Right. But. So those are a couple of guys I'm keeping my eye on because I think the linebacker position is one that will be addressed at some point because you need some more bodies. Those two guys in particular, I think, you know, you would expect them not to be there at 30, but if they did, it might be really, really hard to pass up on them. However, I'm going to go with the same position as you, but I don't think Trufant's going to be there.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Jonathan Banks
from
Mississippi State. I like this kid. I like the other kid next to him, too. I like Darius Slay, but I think he would be there in the second. So I'm going to go with Banks. Not a popular pick right now. Only a handful of mock drafts have selected him with the Falcons in the past couple of weeks. But I think your top corners are going to be Milliner, Xavier Rhodes, Desmond Trufant. I think all three of those guys are going to be gone before you pick.
Okay.
And I think that's going to leave you with Banks, which is a great take, I think. I like this kid. So
I think it's a good choice. I wouldn't have an issue with that.
Yeah. Good.
I don't know that I'd have an issue with any pick, but
right.
If they went and picked a wide receiver in the first round, I might be like, what?
Right. But listen, if that does happen and you got to get, like – it's never going to happen. But, like, if a Tavon Austin falls to you.
True.
I mean, you've got to remember, like, the returner is a need.
Yeah. Right. No, you're right there.
So you need you're going to fill your needs any way possible. And at number 30, you're much more likely to take a BPA situation, a best player available, than you are to, like, just zero in on one position. That's why it changes so much this, you know. I see it all the time in the mock drafts. It just changes so much, and it's because at number 30, first of all, you don't know who's going to be there. Second of all, like, if you just nail yourself down to one position, you may miss out on some talent at other positions.
I've been playing this game lately with my friends. Would you?
I don't know
it's
where
like you see something on
I know
TV.
That I like where this is going.
You know, you see a commercial of some dude base jumping off like the largest building in the world, and
no,
would you do that?
Nope.
You know, under what circumstances would you do that? So
none.
here's the would you. If there's, I'm gonna name five guys.
Okay.
Tavon Austin, Jarvis Jones, Alec Ogletree. I'm sorry, four guys, and Jonathan Banks. If all four of those guys are available,
wow.
And you're taking you're kind of looking at a best player available. Who would you take?
I mean, I think your best player out of those four guys is going to be Austin.
Really?
I really do. But, I mean, that begs the question. Do you go – I mean, look, this kid, I'm seeing him like he's going top 10 now.
Yeah.
So I don't think this would ever happen.
Okay.
But it's interesting because you have these defensive needs, but you also have the return needs. Where do you weigh them? You know, obviously, I think you put way more emphasis on your defense.
I think so.
And I think you pass on Austin. I think as far as, like, out of those four guys, who's the best player, I would say Austin. But I think you would go with a guy like either Jones or Ogletree because they're your best defensive players. I don't know that you want to, like, peg yourself to, like, one position is what I'm saying.
No, absolutely.
So, I don't know. It's tough.
But
this is why
that's a great scenario,
I'm not a GM is because I can't make these decisions.
And that's the other thing is, You're not okay. Thomas Dimitroff is put in a position where he needs to make the best decisions with the money that he has because ultimately, it's not his money.
Right.
Now think about this for a second. If you're Arthur Blank and you're a billionaire, but you've got this money to invest in the team and you do so, but there comes a point where you know you have guys that work for you that are making mistakes in their decisions, and Thomas certainly has not done that, but. That's kind of the position that Thomas is put in each time he signs a free agent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this you know, the concern of wanting to make the best decision possible with
there's
the money.
There's a lot of pressure.
Yeah,
there's
it
a,
is
lot
a lot
of pressure.
Pressure.
And
it's,
that's
it's
why
truly, yeah.
I couldn't do it. I don't know.
You got to be confident in your judgment of players.
Yes. And that's ultimately what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And that's why you see these guys who are former scouts – climb their way up the ladder and end up becoming GMs rather than, in some cases, we've seen guys from the business side become a GM, and it's a very different background.
Yeah, absolutely.
And different kind of what
no doubt.
Everything that you're looking at. So, all right, so we say, are we making a second-round pick too?
Yeah, let's go to second round. On the clock, Atlanta Falcons select. Who would you take in the second round?
All right, so –
second round is even more difficult, I think.
Of course. And look, fans, listen, we are throwing darts right now, okay? No, none of us think that we're going to be even close on this, and who knows what could happen. There's a part of me that thinks Zach Ertz is going to fall in the second round. How far? I don't know that he's going to fall to 60. Do you trade
That's
up and get him?
You've
got 11 picks. You're going to have some to play around with. You can't trade away the compensatory picks, but because you have the compensatory picks, it makes the other picks easy to part with. Mm-hmm. I wonder if Ertz falls, you know, into the 40s, maybe the 50s. Do you end up trading up to get him? Do you like him enough? Do you want to fill that need and kind of take that off the table? Because let's face it, you've gone into the past three drafts knowing that tight end is a need eventually. Mm-hmm. Okay, do you go with him? I don't know. I think there's some other very good quality defensive players that are still going to be there in the second. A guy like DeMontre Moore could fall.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think of who else. Tank Carradine, your guy you did the draft spotlight on today, he could fall.
Oh, man, that would be fantastic. This guy is fascinating. If you haven't read it, you should definitely read the draft spotlight today.
Yes, definitely read it.
Or whatever day you're listening to this.
Right.
It'll be on the website.
Right.
It's pretty interesting. He's an interesting guy.
He is.
Matt Miller said he was, of all the players in the draft, if he was healthy, he's one of his top five players.
That's significant.
Yeah.
To say that. The only thing I worry about is that, you know, before the season, mm-hmm. before Brandon Jenkins got hurt, he wasn't a starter.
Right.
That doesn't necessarily mean he was a, you know, because he clearly went out there and did what he did without having a guy like Jenkins around. And let's not forget that Jenkins is going to be in this draft.
Yeah.
And somebody's going to, I think, is going to get a steal with him. I think.
Okay. I have to double check, but yeah, you could be right.
So.
Not bad. That's a good.
Google.
WWW.
See, your boy knows a little bit more than you think. So, you've got Werner, you've got Carradine, and you've got Jenkins, right?
Uh huh.
Those three guys from Florida State. All of them very good players.
Yeah.
So,
it was a lot of talent in front of him.
Yes.
He had 5.5 sacks last season. As a junior, mm-hmm. and as a backup rotational.
Right.
And they do a lot of that rotation stuff, too, and he kind of got caught in that where he wasn't on the field as much as maybe he would have liked. But once Jenkins went down, that rotation, you know, obviously goes down by one as well, and he's hit the field. And, you know, halfway through the season, people were talking, this is top-flight defensive end right here mm-hmm. in Cornelius Tank. Carradine.
I mean, you don't get the name Tank, the nickname Tank for being a fluffy guy out on the field.
No, or you don't get to hang on to it. He had it as a baby, but you get to keep the name.
Yeah. You know, if you go and you're like, because here's nicknames don't work if you go, oh yeah, hey, my nickname is Crusher or something like that. You don't give yourself a nickname.
No.
Other people
do
give you that nickname and it sticks. And if you receive that nickname as a kid, and you go all the way through college, and people in college are still calling you Tank, you've earned that nickname.
I asked Matt if nicknames matter to scouts, and he laughed.
Yeah, I saw that.
He's like, well, if a guy was nicknamed Slacker or something like that, it would be a flag, and we would be concerned about that.
But right.
If you can have a nickname like Tank and you hang on to it, it's probably a good sign.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm going to stop delaying. I'm going to go ahead and make my second-round pick. Okay. But I keep in mind, I think there's got some guys who could fall.
I think your point on Zach Kurtz is a really good one, and that's not something we've heard. And that's a good
– Right. So that's why I am going to go throw the curveball and say that you trade up and you get Ertz.
I like it.
I'm going to say that I don't know anything. I'm throwing darts here. But I'm saying it could be a possibility. I could see him falling – into the second round. But I think in order to get him, you'd have to trade up.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree with that. I like the pick. I like that move. Right. I like it. If I'm on the clock, I'm going to go ahead, keep it simple. I'm going to sit tight at number two in the second round or wherever it is in the second round, what number that is. But I think, again, just as a side note, I think you made a really interesting point with 11 picks. Do you really think there's going to be a turnover of 11 roster spots on this team this year? So that's an interesting way to look at it.
No way.
You know,
I say the magic number's 8.
Yeah. So there's going to be some dealing of some of those picks because they don't want to waste them, you know, on a player they think might work out.
Right.
So I'm gonna go with. So I like that trade, but I'm gonna go with Jamie Collins, linebacker. He ran the fastest 40 time in the NFL Combine from Southern Miss. A name that isn't a big name, but it's a guy that's out there, and I think he could be there in the second round. I think lots of people like him. They love his speed. He's got pretty good size. 92 tackles, 10 sacks, 20 tackles for loss, 5 passes defense, and 4 forced. I love that 4 forced fumbles thing. Mm-hmm. Speaking of forced fumbles, I'm loving OC coming in with all those forced fumbles and that ability to do that. I really, really like that.
He's a big fan of that.
So that's my guy, Jamie Collins, linebacker out of Southern Miss. Maybe more depth there, more speed on the field, young guy, and maybe competes with somebody for a starter's job. But, if nothing else, he's a rotational, situational pass rusher kind of guy and some speed on special teams. I like that pick. So that's who I would go with in the second round.
So you're going cornerback, linebacker.
Cornerback, linebacker.
And I've got cornerback, tight end.
Trade up to tight end, yeah. Hey. I could live with either one of those.
And here's the thing that I find interesting, and I'm starting to see, you know, because we were talking about Tank. Mm-hmm. And we've seen our fair share of defensive ends being projected to the Falcons. this draft is so deep at defensive end that I think you can get an extremely good one in the third round. That's just me. I'm thinking you could get a very good one in the third round. You could get a very good one in the fourth round.
That's a pretty interesting thought. And it kind of leads me into what we were going to talk about here in a minute on the Falcons Flash.
Okay.
You want to
we'll go lead
ahead
it
and
off.
Switch into that?
Go ahead.
It's super interesting that you say that. And this is 2 weeks ago, but it's still relevant. And this is Falcons Flash, where we pick out one story from around the internet that.
Oh please, they know what Falcons
Flash
is now. Who doesn't?
Anyway, so Peter King wrote something. And this is like the second week I've gone with Peter King, but he's always got interesting things to say. But it's not directly related to the Falcons, but I think it relates to what you were saying just now, Jay. And one of the things that I think is really interesting about this year's draft. He was talking with Peter King. I'm sorry, Peter King's article from 2 Mondays ago, and he was speaking with Gil Brandt, who is one of the godfathers of the draft, longtime GM personnel guy with the Dallas Cowboys, and in their heyday as they became a powerhouse in the league, and he's drafting and scouting a lot of those guys that they drafted. Gil Brandt said, "I'd say if you took the 45th player in 2013, he'd be slightly better than the 45th player in 2012. Now, the Falcons didn't pick at 45 last year. It was a little later than that, but I can't remember specifically where they were in the second round.
55.
Okay, so 10 picks later. Mm-hmm. So you think about who they got last year. They got Peter Kons, who became a starter.
Yep.
Quality guy, young guy, great talent, the ability to become a really solid offensive lineman. So if you can find a guy, and if the talent is – according to Gil Brandt, is better this year in that range, you know, from top to bottom, moving into the second round. I feel like there's a really great opportunity to get a starting caliber player in the second round as well. Like, for me, I always think in first round, whoever you pick, he's got to come in. He needs to be a starter. That's always kind of my personal philosophy, so to speak. I just like this draft for, while there may not be superstars, I think you're going to be able to find guys first, second, and third, like you mentioned, Jay, with the depth of defensive ends in this draft. That can come in, and hey, they're not going to be Alden Smith as a rookie, but maybe not that, but they're going to be solid, solid players, and you're going to be guys you can count on and guys that will just continue to develop. But if we can land a Peter Kons-like guy in the second round or equal or better value based on what Gil Brandt's saying, I'm loving that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. All right, I'll get on to my my real quick one here in the Falcons Flash. Steven Jackson appeared on 790 The Zone yesterday, Mayhem in the AM. He was actually in studio. He's in Atlanta right now.
All right.
Looking for a house.
Nice.
Certainly those things you got to get taken care of before before you can really truly concentrate on your job and everything. So he's out house hunting this week. But he stopped by 790 The Zone, talked to the Mayhem and the AM crew. And one of the interesting things that he said was just his insight that he was able to lend to playing the 49ers and that defense, which you mentioned Alden Smith as a part of that defense, Patrick Willis. I mean, they are just stacked on defense. And we saw them, of course, in the NFC Championship game. And some interesting things that Jackson said, basically saying that the run game can really help neutralize that defense. And, of course, we remember in the NFC Championship game, Matt Ryan was slinging it all over the place, but there wasn't a whole lot as far as the running game goes in that game. Jackson thinks that, you know, that run game can help keep that team honest, and is going to open up your passing game. And I'll just share a little bit of what he said here. He says, so when you go into a fight like that, and he says, I say fight as a Ram, we went into that game thinking it was a heavyweight bout. We went into that game. We knew that we were going to have to run the ball. We were going to have to trip the clock. And between the two of our offenses, who both like to run the ball, whoever has the ball last is going to win the game. And, you know, it's interesting because – you know, the Falcons relied so heavily on that passing game in that game.
Yeah.
That you wonder, you know, if the running game would have been able to get going. maybe if things could have been differently. But, you know, I like that here's a guy that's coming in. He's a veteran. He's a leader. He knows a little bit about a team that we're going to be facing in 2013.
Yeah, this is true. You know, and that's what we talked about. When we talked about the Steven Jackson signing initially, I think we targeted in on his, like, 4.2 yards a carry and just that ability to continue to grind out, offensive possessions. I don't think anyone questions or doubts the offensive passing attack, the firepower, the quick strike ability, so to speak. But sometimes the Falcons were definitely missing that ability to get back to old school, like running the ball a little bit and grinding out the clock and managing the clock like they've been so good at in the past. And I think Steven Jackson can kind of bring them back to that ability as well.
Yep.
And it's
going to be fun to see.
And you're right, though. And that experience in the NFC West against Seattle and the 49ers is going to come in handy, I think.
Yep. All right, so let's get on to – oh.
Real quick.
What
hey,
we got?
The beauty of text message. I texted Matt Miller, our Bleacher Report draft guru. You're right, Jay. Brandon Jenkins is going to be in the draft, a guy that was a high-profile pick, a top pick coming out of FSU, injured in the – I believe it's the first game of the season.
Yep.
Out for the year. He says he is in the draft, coming off the knee injury. Obviously, if he's healthy, he'll be a second-round pick. 2 years of season-ending injuries could drive him down, but he's a guy that's out there, and you know.
I really think that if he was able to put together a full campaign last year,
yeah,
that he would be considered probably a top five, top ten pick.
Absolutely,
he had
so
that
talent. So there's another name out there that you know.
But that's just an example of a guy. Okay, you know, here's a guy who, everything being equal, would have been probably a top five, top ten pick.
Mm-hmm.
Who probably because of his injury past, because of not getting a ton of tape on him last year,
yeah,
is going to be a guy you're going to get in the middle rounds.
Yep.
So who knows? I like him, but I think for every story like that, there's 20 more just like it. That,
yeah,
you know,
true.
Of guys that you can pick up in the middle rounds. And speaking of compensatory picks, we might have a little story on compensatory picks next week.
Yeah, we might have some stuff we're working on.
Yeah, so pay attention to that. Because if you think those are just throwaway picks, you're sorely mistaken.
Yeah.
And we're going to prove it.
You might be surprised.
We're going to prove it to you. All right, so let's get on to the wrap-up here. We've gone a little long. Right. If you've stuck with us so far, thank you. Anyways, we're going to wrap it up. I'm going to give you three quick things that you probably didn't know about OC Umenyora. All right? Number one, OC is featured in the rapper The Dream's music video for I Love Your Girl. L-U-V is how he spells it there. Of course, you know, one of my favorite music videos of
Absolutely.
All time. I watch it
songs.
At least three times a day. It's one of my favorites. All right. Number two, this is a great one.
Yeah.
OC Umenyora is a chief of a village in Nigeria. And that's a true story. He visited the village of, I'm going to kill this name.
I've been looking forward to this for 2 weeks.
Akbunike? Akbunike. We're going to call
it. Yeah, that's a great
isn't that?
Job.
All right. Akbunike in 2007 and was named a chief. Not a Kansas City chief, but an actual chief.
Chief
He's
of a village.
You know, he can go there and, like, you know, tell them to do things.
Huh.
Number three. He is engaged. Boy, we would all love to be so lucky one day. But he is engaged to the 2011 Miss Universe, Layla Lopez, and OC. I will thank you to stop dating my ex-girlfriends.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. That's those are three things that that you may not have known about OC Umenyora that you can take with you and impress all your friends at the bar.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And all right, so go ahead and introduce this last one.
Right,
it's kind
you
of
know,
interesting.
Hey, first of all, my condolences to Syracuse Orange. No longer the Orange Men. I've done a lot of research on this.
They are
not
Orange Men anymore.
Syracuse Orange.
Yep.
I know. You know, they had a tough day last Saturday. They lost in the NCAA championship or Final Four, which was here in Atlanta. And just if I could just say, Atlanta hosted a They did an awesome job.
They did. I was down there, too.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
I went down there on Saturday. From all I've heard from all my friends and everybody I know that went down there, have just loved the experience. The people were great. It was well run. There was a lot of people there, but you got to kind of expect that. So, anyway,
the city should be very, very proud.
So, I figured in honor of the Final Four and it being in Atlanta, perhaps we would put together our own. And we've seen a lot of bracket type stuff during this time of the year in all sports, but I thought maybe we would put together our own Falcons Final Four.
Okay.
So, for instance, the Mount Rushmore of Falcons.
Players and coaches.
Yes, players. Well, of the franchise.
Yeah.
So it can maybe extend beyond players and coaches. I think you'll see what I'm talking about.
Okay.
So I have my four.
Okay.
And I'm going to name them to you.
Okay, name them.
First of all, it has to be Tommy Nobis, first ever player drafted by the Falcons back in '66, first season.
Mr. Falcon. You
exactly.
don't earn that nickname for
yes,
doing nothing.
Did. Exactly. If you don't put Mr. Falcon up there, I don't see what else you can do. Mm-hmm. Anyway, five Pro Bowls, Rookie of the Year, really good, underrated linebacker, I think, in the NFL and for the Falcons. So he's my first guy. Second, Deion Sanders went into the NFL Hall of Fame as a Falcon. And I think even though his time in Atlanta was maybe shorter than it should have been, I think most accounts would say that, he was still a Falcon, still went the only Falcon in the Hall of Fame, or the only player that represented the Falcons going into the Hall of Fame. I think he's got to be up there prime time. You just got to love everything about Deion and the way he played and how exciting he was. My next two.
I think you're going to get some tweets about that one.
I'm sure I will.
I think you're going to get some tweets about that one.
Okay. Just hey, well, bring it on. Let's discuss it.
Yep.
So I got Nobis, Sanders. I'm going to put Arthur Blank on the Mount Rushmore of Falcons. And I mean, how can you not, after the ups and downs of this franchise for all the years since 1966, Arthur Blank comes in and purchases the team in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
And has really done an incredible job changing the culture and just everything about the Falcons and finally putting the Falcons and building the Falcons. It took a while, you know, building them to a point where they are, as Coach Smith always talked about, wanting to be relevant on a year-to-year basis and relevant in the playoff discussion each season. And just a team that the fans are proud of and they get behind, and we're growing a fan base now with, you know, young kids, you know, being born into Falcons families and growing up as Falcons fans. And I feel like Arthur Blank has had such a huge part of that.
Yep.
And my final guy, I'm going to say Mike Smith.
Okay.
And I know I'm passing up Matt Ryan and Jesse Tuggle and whole bunch of guys, Barkowski, a lot of guys that meant a lot to this franchise. But I'm going to put Coach Smith up there because he's coached and led teams that have done things that no other team in the Falcons history has ever done. So that's my Mount Rushmore.
Okay. Very interesting.
Okay.
All right. Well, I'm going to lead off with Mike Smith because I agree with you. I think he should definitely be up there. And the ending of his story has yet to be written.
Yeah.
And I think the sky's the limit, obviously, there. Number two, I'm going to also go with Tommy Nobis. I think, like you said, you can't have a guy named Mr. Falcon not end up on there. Number three, I am going with Jesse Tuggle. I have to.
Hammer.
I love Jesse.
Yeah.
Even back before I worked here. So much respect for him and everything that he accomplished and just kind of where he came from and just being
a guy who still looks like he can play.
Jeez. I mean, get him some shoulder pads. So I like where you went with some of these, but it's tough. It's tough. I agree with you on Matt because it's not quite.
Hey, Matt, go win me a Super Bowl, and you're on my Mount Rushmore.
There you go. But I am I'm going to go with Arthur Blank because I think that, you know, that
good.
It is – like you said, none of what's happening and what's happened over the last couple of years would be possible without him. So I think it's only natural that he belong in that group. But certainly, like you said, a couple of guys that are left out right now. Mm-hmm. But I don't think, like, in 5 years, I think answering that question will be much, much, much more difficult. Just my prediction.
Oh, absolutely.
So
we'll find out.
We will.
We'll discuss it, I hope, in 5 years.
That's right. All right, fans. Well, if you've made it this far, thank you so much. We were a little long-winded this time.
Okay, hey,
this
2 weeks, man. We haven't spoken.
You're
yet.
Right. I'm just kidding. That's true. You're right.
We've spoken. Not yes. via podcast. So.
No. But thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week. Hope to have some more surprises and fun stuff for you.
Yeah.
And tweet us.
A week away from the draft
next
week.
That's right. Tweet us, as always. Let us know what you want to hear. And we will talk to you next week. Thanks again for joining us.